Do you think you know the law? See if you really do by playing along with us in the law game. And here, as always, is your chairman, Shaw Taylor.
And a very good evening to you. Well, I've got some more fictitious cases for you, all based on real ones that were judged on the same points of law. And if we tend to deviate slightly from proper legal procedure, that's just to get as many cases in as we can. Our Law Game Repertory Company will give their usual sterling performance, acting out all the characters in the situations. And unless I get carried away by the sheer exuberance of their performance, I'll try and stop them with this bell. That is when I turn my attention to our panel and face them with the big decision. Who won the case and why? Each one will have 50 points to bet, and I'll match their bets if they choose the winning side. I'll give them 2-1 if they come up with the right legal reasons. Panel held over from last week for a return match are John Junkin, Diane Keane, and Lance Percival. You know, the last week I was saying, had you had a brush with the law, I wonder if there are any particular laws that you disagree with, or maybe situations where you think a law ought to be enacted. You know, people do say there ought to be a law against it. John Junkin, have you got any suggestions for new laws?
Well, I think television and radio in this country are awash with quizzes and panel games. Hang on, I haven't finished yet. You get involved in the show, I get involved in them, Diane does, Lance does, and we're all up for grabs, and the only person who's never up for grabs is the brains behind it.
Ah.
Now, they devise them, you see,
yes.
And they sit back, and they collect all the money, and they buy the holiday home in the Bahamas and everything, while we do all the real work. And I think there should be a law that says the person who devises the game should buy the first round of drinks after it's over.
What a very good idea. I'll just ring round the pub and tell him Brad Ashton will be around just to put his money down any moment now. Diane, any law that you feel ought to be enacted or one you don't like particularly?
Well, I think there should be a law against election promises, false election promises.
Oh, I mean... What a lovely idea that politicians, when they say we will do this when we get into power, could be sued if they were not.
If they don't.
Oh, there's a popular one. What about you, Lance Percival?
Well, as a deviser of several television games, I feel there should be a law against John Junkin for a start. Or buying a drink. But my real thought, no, seriously, my real thought is, have you ever noticed on television, talking about politics as Diane was in the sense of election promises, have you ever noticed that whenever a politician's asked a question, he will immediately answer by saying, well, I think that's a very good question you just asked there, and if you ask Mr. Foote the same question, I'm sure that he would reply in a completely different manner in the way which I would feel, because, of course, he always disagreed with what I feel, and he disagreed last week with what I feel, and that's exactly the way it's going to be. Thank you very much. So yes. I think there ought to be a law that politicians should have to actually answer questions for a change. They never answer them directly. They always put the blame on the last government or the present government. I'm not taking any sides.
There's a lovely bit of rhubarb comes from the audience. They're obviously entirely on your side. All right, then, let's go on to our first case. Remember, it was one I was talking about at the end of last week's programme. It happened at the January sales at a big London shoe shop. An Australian couple on holiday over here were searching through the shoes on display to find a pair that the wife liked.
Oh, this is the one I want, Peter. See if you can find the right foot to match this. I want size 4. Well, isn't that the same shoe on the floor over there? You know, just where you're standing.
Oh, can't be the same. It's much cheaper.
Oh, well, somebody's probably stuck the wrong price tag on it. Go on, check the size.
Oh, okay. You're right, Tess. It is the same shoe. And guess what? It's a size 4.
A right foot?
Yeah, it's that as well. Hey, you're a look. Here.
Well, I'd be even luckier if I could pay the cheaper price for them. £8.50. Ooh, that'd save me £3.
Oh, maybe there's something wrong with the shoe.
No, it looks perfect to me. Oh, yes, it must have been a mistake when they marked the price.
Well, try it on. If it fits, let's take the shoes and go, eh?
Oh, well, they fit fine. Hey, and they look good, don't you think?
Yeah, very nice. Come on, let's go and pay for it.
Okay. I'll take these, thank you.
Oh, I'll put them in a box for you, madam.
Oh, no, no, don't bother. I think I'll wear them. You can put my old ones in a bag for me.
Oh, certainly. But I'll ring up the price first. How much were the shoes?
The price is underneath. I'll take it off and show you.
Oh, thank you. Right. £20 note. That's £11.50 change. Here we are. And here are your shoes. Thank you, madam.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Did you charge that lady only £8.50?
Yes. That's what it said on the price tag. Why, anything wrong?
Yes. She deliberately cheated you. Excuse me, madam.
Yes?
I'm a store detective, and I have reason to believe that you have just stolen that pair of shoes you are wearing.
Stolen them? What are you talking about? I just paid for them. Well, look, here's the receipt.
This receipt is for £8.50, and those shoes are £11.50.
Are they?
You know very well they are. I heard you and your husband discussing it. You lied to the cashier about the price. That is stealing.
I didn't lie to him. I didn't even mention the price.
No, but you conveniently showed him the shoe marked £8.50, even though you knew that price label was a mistake.
Well, even if I did, it was the shop's mistake, not mine.
I'm sorry, madam, but I don't see it that way. As far as I'm concerned, you have stolen the property of the shop, and it's our policy to prosecute anyone caught stealing.
Now, here's a tricky one, panel. Should she have shown the other price that was on the other shoe, or should she have stuck with the one she did, or should she have shown both prices and asked which was the right one? Do you think they could make that charge of theft stick? Was she found guilty of theft or not? John Junkin.
As I always do on this programme, unfailingly, we'll say that she was in the right and I will be proved to be wrong.
You will go on her side?
Yes.
Any particular reason for going on her side?
I think, it's the word I keep using, the onus of responsibility is on the store. And they had the two different labels and she opted for the one, and I think that's entirely up to them to make sure that their goods are labelled correctly.
Well done, sir. A very wise and reasonable judge. Diane Keane, would you go along with that?
Yes, I do. No, I think it's absolutely right. The store, it's the responsibility of the store to label all their goods correctly. And also, I mean, the store detective said that she was trying to do the store out of £3. Mm-hmm. Well, he assumed that he didn't know the price of the shoes. He just knew that one was £8.50 and one was £11.50. Therefore, he assumed that she was trying to do the store out of £3. For all we know, the store could have been trying to do her out of £3. He assumed that. I think that's very wrong. Now, I think that she would have got away with it simply because the store should have been responsible for labelling everything correctly, and she did actually present a price to them.
Store responsibility, once again, same reasons as John. Both find them not guilty. What about Lance Percival?
Well, I would first of all like to know which store Bruce and Sheila from downtown Alice Springs went to, because I'm never going there again, boy. But I think that the store won the case, not because I think they ought to, but because I always believe in this programme going for the unlikely.
So you've gone against it. So we've got two who say not guilty. That's John and Diane. Lance says that she would have been found guilty. Let's see what points you're going to put on it. First of all, John Junkin, you have 50 points. You start with a clean start. I've given you back the 50 you lost last week.
Oh, thank you. Oh, fiddle. Right will triumph eventually if I keep on coming on this programme. 30.
30. Right. Diane Keane, you guessed the same as John. How many points will you bet?
30.
Oh, will you? So you'd like to stay alongside him if possible. Lance Percival, you're out on a limb. You say she was found guilty. What will you bet?
Well, I think these two pommies are not exactly big gamblers, so I'll put down 5.
5? Very sensible, because the charge did not stick. The lady was acquitted. Marjorie got away with it. Now, none of you gave me the right reasons for this, or at least John and Diane didn't give me the right reasons. It was the fact that the cashier accepted the price that was marked on that one shoe without checking both of them, because he was a servant of the shop. So he was acting on behalf of the shop. If he accepted the £8.50 instead of the £11.50, indeed, he asked for this $8.50. But once he'd done that, then the shoes became the lady's property, so she had every right to take them out of the store, and good luck to her. So she won on that one. Now, what do our points do? Our points say that John Junkin, you bet 30, so you're up to 80, because you didn't give me the right reasons. Diane Keane, same again. You're with John at 80. You very wisely, Lance, only bet 5, so you're down to 45 points. You could still catch him up.
Kept it alive.
Right. Here comes the second case. It takes us into court where a man named Paul Hamerton is being charged with obstructing the police in the execution of their duty. Now, as we join the case, the lady counsel for the prosecution is questioning one of the two police officers involved.
Constable Bradley, at the time of the alleged obstruction, were you and your colleague in police uniform?
Well, yes. That is, we weren't wearing helmets or tunic jackets, but we did have on our uniform black trousers and blue anoraks. This is what we normally wear when we're on surveillance work, sitting in an unmarked car.
What was this particular surveillance job you were engaged in?
A burglary had been committed, and we were parked across the street from the suspect's house, waiting for him to return home, which he did at 6:30 a.m.
I presume you tried to arrest the man?
Yes, Mum. He was fumbling for his keys to go into his house when Police Constable Finnegan and I shouted to him that we were the police and wanted a word with him. He immediately took flight and ran off down the street. We, of course, gave chase.
And eventually caught up with him.
Well, we lost him at first because he ran down the side of number 86 and into the back garden. By the time we got through to that garden ourselves, the suspect was already inside the kitchen of the house.
The house being the one belonging to Mr. Hamerton, the accused.
That's right, Mum. We could see the figures of the two men, the accused and the suspect, through the opaque glass panels of the kitchen door.
Well, if the glass was opaque, how could you be certain that one of the figures you saw through it was the man you were chasing?
He was wearing a brown donkey jacket, which we could easily make out. He was leaning against the door to make sure it wasn't opened. Again, we shouted that we were police officers and ordered him to open the door, but he didn't.
So you entered by force?
Yes, I picked up a brick and smashed the glass panel with it. Then I reached through and unlocked the door from the inside. P.C. Finnegan and I went in.
And what did you find?
Well, that the suspect had already left the kitchen to make an escape out through the front of the house. Mr. Hamerton, still in his pyjamas and dressing gown, was blocking our way so that we couldn't follow him.
Well, did Mr. Hamerton say anything to you at the time?
Oh, yes, Mum. He was most abusive.
Did you show him your police identity cards at any time?
Yes, but he still blocked our way and became even more abusive. He insisted we get out because we hadn't got a search warrant. He said we were infringing the rights of a law-abiding citizen by forcing an entry without one.
And what did you reply to that?
Oh, we didn't reply at all. At that point, we heard the front door slam shut and pulled the accused out of the way to continue our chase. Happily, the suspect was caught up with and arrested, but 2 hours later. And that 2 hours was wasted because of the willful hindrance offered by Mr. Hamerton.
Thank you, Constable. I have no more questions. Millard, now I'd like to question the accused, if I may.
Proceed, Miss Layton.
Thank you, my lord. Mr. Hamerton, how well did you know the man the police were chasing?
Not all that well.
So he was little more than a fairly casual acquaintance, one can say. And yet you let him into your kitchen through the back door at 6:30 in the morning.
I didn't let him in. He came in. I was cooking myself breakfast. He saw the light on, banged on the door. He said he was being chased by a couple of thugs who he thought were muggers. And when the police arrived, I quite naturally assumed they were muggers.
So you refused to let them in. But when they forced their way in and proved to you that they were real policemen, why did you then still obstruct them in the course of their duty?
Because I didn't, and I still don't, think they had the right to break into the home of an innocent person. Now, you heard the constable say he knew his suspect lived in the house up the street. Well, mine wasn't the house of the criminal, and he had no legal right to enter it without the proper warrant being issued by someone of higher authority. As I saw it, they were trespassing, and I have no obligation in law at all to let trespassers pass through my house.
Now, on the face of the argument, it seems to be valid on both sides, doesn't it? But which side won the case? Was it the prosecution or the defense? Diane Keane, what do you think?
I think that Mr. Hamerton was actually correct. You see, the policeman only had on trousers and anoraks. I mean, they weren't really dressed as policemen, were they?
No. And anybody can put on trousers and anoraks, let's face it.
Yes, this is true. Well, I've seen it done myself.
Oh.
Also, I mean, they smashed his kitchen door, I understand.
Yes, they did. They smashed the glass in the kitchen door.
Yes, I'm sure they didn't have a right to do that. I still think that Mr. Hamilton will get off on a technicality, probably, but he will get off. I think he was a bit of a cantankerous.
Fine. Mr. Hamilton will be acquitted on a charge of obstructing the police. Lance Percival, what do you think?
Well, as soon as this case is finished, I'm going round to Dinah Keane's place to put on some trousers and anorak.
6:30 in the morning, you do realise that.
Now, the interesting thing is that as far as the business of entering the house is concerned, I seem to remember reading a case not so long ago where a drinking driving case where a man escaped out of his car and got into his house and the policeman arrested him in his house, but he got away with it simply because they didn't have the right formalities to enter the house, if you see what I mean.
Yes.
And therefore, I presume the same thing applies here, regardless, nothing to do with the uniform, whether they suspected him. Presumably, you've got to have certain rights to enter the house.
You go along with Diane on this. Not guilty. Right, we've got two not guilties here. Mr. Hammond's got away with it so far. What do you think, John Junkin?
I do know, depressingly enough, I did something on this a few months ago. There's something like 1,200 different agencies and subdivisions and sub-departments in this country who have an absolutely legal right to burst into your home at any time whatsoever. Did you know that? Isn't it awful? An Englishman at home isn't his castle at all. It's everybody else's. VAT men can leap in through your window while you're having a bath. You're not having paid VAT on the soap. There's all sorts of things. You can jump into your house and quite legally so. I can only guess that having whatever had taken place before, the outside bit and the uncertainties, that at a time when a policeman shows you his warrant card and asks for your help, if you do not give it, knowing at that time that he's a police officer, that you are consciously obstructing the police, therefore I imagine they...
You find him guilty. So we have Diane Keane with 80 points, finds them not guilty. How many of your 80 points will you bet, Diane?
Oh, go on, 30.
30! Oh, right. Lance Percival, you have 45 points. How many will you bet?
I'll go down gradually. I'll go 20, please.
You'll go 20. So, you find him not guilty. John, you're the odd one out, John Junkin. You have 80 points. You could either leap ahead or go straight down the pan, one or the other. Which, how many will you bet?
Yes, I'll go 30.
You'll go 30?
Yes.
Right. So, Paul Hamilton was convicted. The police were entirely legally entitled to enter Mr. Hamilton's house to arrest his friend, whom they suspected had committed an arrestable offence, and to use force if necessary. The use of force had been necessary in this case, and it followed that Mr. Hamilton, once he knew they were policemen, had obstructed the police while they'd been acting in the execution of their duty. John Junkin, you were not only right, you were right for the right reasons, so therefore, I double your points to 60, it makes you 140. Diane and Lance, you were both wrong. Diane, you go down to 50. Lance, you go down to 25. And we turn to our final case today. It came about under the Trade Descriptions Act. It concerns a lady who bought a car from a second-hand car dealer, took it to a mechanic friend of hers to have one or two extras fitted.
Well, you should have taken me along with you, Nicky. I'd never let you buy a car like this.
Oh, it's really that bad.
Not mechanically. The engine's sound enough, but these panels are terribly crowded.
So I didn't get such a bargain as I thought.
No way. Blimey. I hadn't noticed this. Hey, look what the battery was covering over.
You mean that hole?
Big as your fist. Now, that really is bad corrosion. Oh, you've been done, Nicky. There's no two ways about that.
Here, do you think there's a chance I can ask for my money back?
Oh, I'd say it's worth a try. Hey, what did the fella say about it when you bought it?
Well, nothing, really. Oh, but the sign on it, under the price, said taxed, MOT, good condition.
Oh, good.
Yes, I'm sure it said good condition.
Oh, well, go back and threaten him with false representation under the Trades Descriptions Act. Well, I'm not sure whether you have a case or not, but it might work.
Right, thanks. Well, wish me luck, then.
Afternoon, miss. Can I help you?
Yes. Is the salesman here with the moustache?
You know, the tall, thin fella.
Oh, the manager, Mr. Stockley. No, he's out of the auctions today. Something I can do?
Well, he sold me this car last Monday.
Yes, good car, that. Wish we had more like him. Could sell him by the dozen?
It's supposed to be in good condition.
Well, so it is. That engine purrs like a Siamese kitten.
Well, maybe, but the bodywork's corroded. Oh. Your notice said good condition. And no matter what you say, a car that's corroded isn't in good condition.
Well, it's nothing serious. I mean, for what you paid for the car, you're still getting a bargain. It's just had a very recent MOT certificate. Done only last week, as a matter of fact. Well, if the Ministry of Transport passed it as being in good condition, that's good enough for us. Any complaints you've got, you better take to them.
So, you're refusing to refund my money?
Sorry, no way.
Well, in that case, I'll be taking out a summons under the Trades Description Act.
Please yourself, miss. As long as we have that MOT certificate as recent as last week, we're in the clear.
Well, there are the facts, panel. Could the car dealer be found guilty of contravening the Trade Description Act? What do you think, Lance Purcell?
The thing is, this thing about the sign saying taxed MOT good condition, which could mean, of course, that the MOT is in good condition, not the car. And the second thing is, the number of second-hand cars that I bought from a lot of shysters who sold me a lot of rubbish, I know perfectly well they get away with it. However, she's going to win the case for a reason which escapes me.
All right. You just liked her. She sounded rather nice.
She's very
pretty. You fine for the lady. They didn't get... They did get done under Trade Description Act. John Junkin, what do you think? Do you think they got done?
The one thing I am fairly sure of is that an MOT does not cover the actual bodywork of the car. I think it covers the frame and the engine and the brakes and the lights, but I don't think the bodywork is covered. So all I can think of is if you say good condition to a general member of the public, to a non-expert, good condition would mean the whole car, including bodywork and seats and so on, were in good condition. If the corrosion was there, which the family friend saw, then I think the lady's got a case. But unless I know whether the corrosion was there or not, it's going to be very difficult to say.
The corrosion was there, sir.
The corrosion was there. Well, in that case, I think the lady's got a case because the MOT does not cover bodywork.
You find for the lady and that they were done for... under the Trade Descriptions Act. What do you think, Diane Keane?
Well, I feel really sorry for it because I was that lady once. I think John is right that the MOT probably doesn't cover the bodywork as extensively perhaps as it should on cars. And we also know that there are garages that sell you cars that say, they say are in good condition and they're covered up with paint or under seal, as this one obviously was. But she did have the opportunity to have the car checked over by either the AA or the RAC or indeed the family friend, the expert. And she didn't. And I do think that if she wanted to have anything done, she should have done it before she handed over her money. And I don't think that she could have... I think that she's lost her case.
You do? You don't feel they would have been done under the Trade Descriptions Act?
Well, good condition. What does it mean? It didn't say good condition bodywork. It just said good condition. The engine was in good condition. No, I don't think they could. I think
they
may have.
They got away with it. So we have two who say they got away with it. That's Diane and Lance. John Junkin is the odd man out here, but then he's in the lead. So anything could happen to him. Up or down he might go. It depends how many points he puts on it. Lance Percival, you're the first one to bet. You've got 25 points to bet with.
Well, now, in order to catch up John Junkin, I was wondering if you could lend me a couple of 100 points there.
For you, Lance, anything.
No, well...
Have 200.
I'll steadily go down to 5 and I'll serve a bet 20 points.
20 points, you will bet. Right, Diane... Oh, no, John, I would like your bet next, please.
What is my credit?
You've got 140 points here and you're the other man.
140. I might as well be consistent in my stupidity and arrogance and put 30 on this as well.
30 on this as well, right. Put 30 on for you. And Diane, what will you put on your 50 points you've got? What will you bet?
45
you will bet. How very interesting. Now, you and Lance say that they got away with it. John says they got done for it. I'm here to tell you that the lady won her case. The dealer was convicted. He was convicted of supplying a car to which he'd applied a false trade description. A person in his position could not reasonably have described the car as being in good condition.
Oh.
And the fact that he got an MOT certificate doesn't matter, because the MOT certificate says that it cannot be accepted or regarded as evidence of the car's condition. Now, John, you didn't quite give me the right reasons, because you said it applied to some things and not to others. In actual fact, you can't use the MOT certificate to say this car is in good condition. It is simply roadworthy. So, I'm going to give you your winning point.
I said the good condition MOT, I said.
Yes, you did indeed. The only problem was you got the answer wrong. So, John, you are a winner with 170, but I'm happy to say that we have 2 seconds tonight with 5 points each.
Ah.
Ryan Keane and Lance Percival. Now, before we take our leave of you, let me just titillate you with a brief outline of one of the cases we'll be dramatising and asking next week's celebrity panel to decide on. It concerns a man very badly injured in an aeroplane when it flew through turbulent weather. The plane landed safely enough, and happily the man eventually managed to recover from the injuries, but he claimed more than the normal damages allowed under the Warsaw Convention, because he said that the pilot was reckless in not putting on the fastened seatbelt sign. Now, he had to prove recklessness rather than just negligence if he was going to win his case. Did he, or didn't he? Think about it, and then tune in again next week and see if you guessed the right answer. Until then, let me say good night on behalf of tonight's panel of John Junkin, Diane Keane, and Lance Percival, Law Game Repertory Company, Miranda Forbes, Nicholas Courtney and Ronald Herdman, deviser and writer Brad Ashton, legal advisor Doug Cracknell, producer Richard Edis, and me, Shaw Taylor. Bye-bye.